Well, certainly we felt that we were number one in the business at that time. Then, of course, I almost immediately had a lot of insight into Fairchild right away, of course. And it was interesting to see that they'd gone to a totally different track. And they, our whole thrust at Motorola was that we're going to kill the industry with mechanization and we're going to automate everything, and which we thought we had pretty well. And then I got to Fairchild, and they had really had a very low level of automation, but they'd been very aggressive on what we called in those days jet age automation. That they built a factory in Hong Kong because they figured out that, well, hell, you know, with jets, you're only 12 hours away from Hong Kong. And if we've got, at that time, we were paying about $3 an hour for labor in Phoenix, if you can get the same job done at 10 cents an hour in Hong Kong, there's a lot of cost to be saved. So they had pretty labor-intensive ways of putting things together, but actually very low cost. I mean, I was astounded when I got to Hong Kong to find how low the costs were. And I found that where we were beating them was not on cost, but it was on the, superior device characteristics and actually better logistics and better customer interaction. And actually, we were pricing all of our stuff higher. They did not have quite the same degree of control as we had of the pricing mechanism. So, but their costs were actually pretty good. But they'd done it a different way, and that they were using what we called glob tops at the time, which was a ceramic base with metal pins pushed through it, and basically you bonded the chip to one of the pins and wired to the other two. And but again, you've got a pretty low cost transistor, so that the where cost was the only issue, they were pretty competitive. Motorola had made a bet on integrated circuits, which was to go with the emitter couple logic, ECL, and that's where they put all of their efforts, when in reality DTL, which was Fairchild, and T-squared L, which was a combination of Fairchild and TI, actually rapidly became the dominant approach. So they were somewhat behind technically in integrated circuits. And then Fairchild had done much more on linear integrated circuits. And, you know, the whole thrust of, Bob Noyce, Gordon Moore, and so on, was to move on to the next generation of technology, move on to whatever that was. And just leave the existing technology behind, essentially. So in transistors, and, you know, your focus here has been transistors, Motorola paid much more attention to improving what you had in transistors and running the transistor business successfully. But to some extent, that this was robbing Peter to pay Paul. I mean, some of the thinking probably was not good. I mean, for example, the... in about 65, I think it was, you know, our transistor business was doing very well. And the question was, we're going to build a new wafer fab. What should we do? And I remember at the time the decision was, well, why don't you go build a new silicon transistor wafer fab, and then you can hand down your fab to the integrated circuit guys, because they can't really afford a new one. Well, McKinsey or Bain or one of the consultants would have said, hey, guys, this doesn't make sense. You put your money on the next generation and so on. But from my standpoint, it was wonderful. That I'd love to build a new wafer fab, yeah? So by the time I got to Fairchild, I found that essentially the transistor group was running on, you know, old tools, or they were relying on the low-cost foreign labor to, you know, rather primitive tools, but low-cost, but it put into a low-cost labor environment, which enabled them to still compete. And they, but on the other hand, we found that Fairchild had, you know, big computers that, you know, very expensive, $5 million or so computers, applied to design automation, which Motorola wasn't anywhere near doing that.